In this pandemic, every student is in a different situation. Some schools have kept in-person classes, while others have used a blended model. Some entire districts, including Philadelphia, have stayed 100% virtual throughout the fall. Education advocates worry about the effects of virtual learning, especially on socialization and early literacy. But what your child has access to depends on where you live, what you have time for, and how much money is in your wallet. I'm Malcolm Burnley. This is The Why. Miles Bryan and Emily Rizzo are reporters for WHYY's Keystone Crossroads. They've been spending time with families across the economic spectrum, trying to help their kids get what they need out of remote learning. First up, Miles tells us about a learning arrangement born out of the pandemic, pods.
Pods come in a lot of shapes and sizes, but they generally refer to, families that are friends with each other or groups of parents kind of getting together and bringing their kids together to replicate an in-person learning environment outside of school, at a home, or, maybe at some kind of third space. The cost of having a pod can run the gamut from free if parents are, just taking turns watching the kids, to a lot of money if they hire a private tutor, which is a popular option for parents with more means. I reported on one pod that had hired a private tutor for a group of about six kids that cost $80 an hour.
It is such an instrumental time in their lives. Their brain development is just at a place where they really need the structure. They really need the learning. They need the social aspect of it. And that was really what drove me to seek out a pod.
So Marissa Geffen is a doctor. Her husband's a surgeon. They have four kids. The youngest attend elementary school in the Lower Merion School District. And she told me that she knew they needed to do something, sort of out of the box. When last spring things shut down, she figured, okay, my husband's at home because all of his surgeries are canceled and we have a full-time nanny, so we should be able to handle this. Turns out they could not handle it.
Between the two of them and four kids, it was still almost impossible to get the kids the instruction that they needed in order to have a successful day.
Melissa banded together with her neighbor, Nikki Robinson, who was also having a tough time providing care for her kids. So, they both ended up, getting connected with a tutoring service on the main line. And that service actually brought them together with another family, and they formed a pod. And, that was a couple of months ago. And at this point, they're incredibly close.
We call ourselves sister wives, right? We're
yeah.
Sister wives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We say we should just, buy like three houses compound. On a cul-de-sac. Yeah. Compound with bridges.
We need a compound.
We need a compound to each house.
So in coverage around the country about pods, it seems like the big topic is around equity or inequity in some cases. I'm wondering, in your experience, Miles, are these parents that you met talking about these inequities?
Yes, definitely. Nikki and Marissa, they both know that they're relatively privileged, that they have the income and the means to afford a private tutor and make sure their children, can survive and thrive in this time in a way that parents without that kind of means don't have as many options to do.
And at first, I was actually very against it because I felt like the gap in learning for the haves and have-nots was just going to be further extended. And that hurt my heart.
But, Nikki and Marissa said they stand by their decision. They think they're doing their best for their kids. And in the end, that's what's most important to them.
Is there a cheaper pod?
Yes, there are cheaper versions of the pod. You do not have to hire a private tutor. I actually talked to a bunch of parents in West Philadelphia who formed a pod without a tutor, and they did it by sort of subbing in and out for who was the teacher for the day. It's a group of parents that all had jobs, but every day somebody has sort of moved their work around to be free enough to watch the group of, five or six second graders, and the other parents then have the day to try and get some work done before they have to pick up their kids. And this group, they stood out to me. They were pretty interesting. Because not only did they form this pod, they were also really concerned about equity and what forming a pod might do in terms of giving their kids something that other kids at their West Philly public school didn't have. So they tried to do something kind of ambitious. Here's Phil Gentry. He's a parent and a music professor.
We knew we couldn't like solve all the problems of the parents of the school, but we knew we were like, maybe we could do it our best for second grade. And so we tried to reach out to as many second grade parents as we could and collect information on what people needed.
They tried to organize the entire second grade class into a bunch of pods.
Did their efforts work?
No, sadly it didn't. By the time I met them, they had sort of ceded to failure. They only ended up organizing with each other. But the reason it didn't work sort of stood out to me and I thought was interesting and maybe says something about how virtual learning has changed, you know, changed everything. But the parents I talked to in West Philly, they said, look, like when their kids are in school, you know, it's a lot easier to make connections. You know, school is this kind of community space. They met fellow parents on the playground. They met fellow parents dropping their kids off or picking them up or having their kids' friends over for, you know, a party or whatever. When life is normal, a neighborhood public school serves as this sort of incredible melting pot. It brings people together who might not otherwise interact. And that's why these West Philly parents love their school. But, you know, all of that is impossible right now. And it made their organizing really hard.
Can't get other parents' contact information. There's no school directories anymore. So we just had to like text and get in touch with teachers and do whatever we could to sort of get people together.
They struggled to get in touch with parents that were out of their friend circle, so they couldn't pull it off.
When we come back...
It's constant. They're constantly asking students to pull their masks up.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Malcolm Burnley. This is The Why. We're talking to Miles Bryan and Emily Rizzo about the wide range of virtual learning experiences. If a pod isn't in the cards, there's an option from the city. Emily, where did you meet Kyrie Robinson?
So I met him outside of Simpson Rec Center in Frankfurt. Simpson Rec Center is one of the city's access centers, which opened in September. These are where the city is offering a place for public school students to go during the day.
Our kids get to learn. We don't have to stress ourselves out trying to keep up like the teachers. And we're able to do what we have to do to provide for our families.
So Kyrie's 28 years old. He's a single dad. He works and runs a business. He said he missed work in the spring when the district closed in-person classrooms. For Kyrie, it's been a big relief. The Access Center has made a big difference in his life. That's what he told me by phone recently.
It's a big help because my son only 8 years old. My son can't be home by himself, especially during school on a computer, on a laptop, which he don't really know how to use 100%. So just knowing that he's getting what he and he's doing good, he's excelling in it, is a big relief off my shoulders.
So the Access Center has been a huge help.
There's more than 2,000 children in Philadelphia who are going to these Access Centers. Could you tell us what an average day is like?
So they're doing their best to emulate a classroom. When I visited Simpson, they had a blackboard at the front of a room inside the rec center, where students worked at desks on their own laptops, which were provided for free by the district over the summer. But I spent most of my time at Vogt Recreation Center in Tacony, which is not far from Simpson. And there was really interesting. So there were two rooms that were makeshift classrooms. One was a huge gymnasium with 22 kids inside. The other one was more like a classroom with 22 kids inside. And their desks are 6 feet apart. It's this echoey space, and you have 3 to 4 staffers walking around, assisting the students with their schoolwork, with any technical problems they're having, whatever. There's kids from 8 different schools, so they're on 8 different schedules. You have some kids like eating lunch. One kid was waving his sandwich around in the air as other students around him were in class trying to focus. And all the kids are wearing masks, but they're sliding down their faces constantly. So a regular thing that you'd hear while walking through the rec center is mask on from the staffers. It's constant. They're constantly asking students to pull their masks up.
Has COVID been an issue at these access centers?
Frankly, yes. But they're dealing with it, right? So as students enter the building, they have to take a survey, making sure that they don't have any COVID symptoms, things like that. But it's tough. I spoke to Stacey Leonard, who is the managing director for community services at Cora, a nonprofit the city is paying to help operate some of the access centers. And she said there have been some close calls with COVID. So some students have gotten in contact with people who tested positive for COVID, and then they've had to stay home. But also at one of the access centers, someone tested positive and everyone in the access center had to quarantine for 2 weeks. So it's definitely a problem, but they're dealing with it as well as they can.
So at these access centers, they're looking out for the well-being of kids from a health perspective during a pandemic and also from an educational perspective. And that really seems like a lot more than rec centers are used to being capable of taking care of.
Yeah, definitely. But I do think they're doing the best that they possibly can. And some parents that I spoke to feel that it's even safer than dropping their kid off at a family's house, right, family member's house, because they're following all these protocols and they're helping their kids with their schooling at the same time.
Are access centers the only option for parents who might not have the money or resources to make a pod?
No, there are other options for parents. I found a couple. I want to introduce you to one in particular, which was organized by this sort of amazing young woman named Sabria Shipley.
I would say Treehouse is a nonprofit giving library / literacy center.
Shipley works at Treehouse Books in North Philly, which has been around for a long time and is sort of a community center, nonprofit, library. But over the last couple of months, it's transformed into a pod, specifically something they're calling an equity pod, which is a concept she says came out of a post on Instagram by this group, Black Education Matters.
They were doing a story about how a lot of schools were going distant learning, but how a lot of our Black and Brown students were disadvantaged because of it. And that the pods were interesting in itself, and I was curious about that idea, but the equity pods spoke more to our demographic and who we are trying to serve.
Shipley is not a parent organizing for her own kids and for, you know, fellow parents. She is someone who works at Treehouse Books, someone who is just invested in her community and saw a need. Treehouse has, you know, long had after-school programs or other kinds of programs for kids, and she just saw an opportunity to create a space for them.
Is it similar at all to what's happening at the access centers?
Yeah, it is really similar. I mean, you have kids together who are learning on their laptops but are supervised by volunteers and by Shipley. But something that stands out about the Equity Pod is that, you know, it really creates space for kids there to reflect on and, you know, process things that are specific to their identity as being Black or being children of color. It has all of this sort of art and decorations honoring prominent Black intellectuals and Black and African culture. I mean, you see student art celebrating James Baldwin, Toni Morrison, Langston Hughes, West African imagery. You know, I was texting Shipley before we recorded this to see what was new, and she said, you know, they've been having a lot of conversations and making a lot of space to process the police killing of Walter Wallace here in Philadelphia.
So, Emily and Miles, a question for both of you. Were you surprised to see such stark differences in these different virtual learning experiences? Or, you know, based on your previous reporting, did it feel like this was kind of the same old story in education?
I mean, the answer is no. I'm not surprised. I think the story that Emily and I are talking through about pandemic pods and other sort of options during this time of virtual learning comes down to the gap in wealth. A lot of parents don't have those resources to help their kids. And so I think you're just going to see that gap continue to grow. So I don't think this is a new story. I think this is the story of education.
I completely agree with Miles, but I do think it's complicated. I think parents, working parents, single parents are doing the best that they can for their kids. They're making the best choice out of not many options. I think a lot of parents that I spoke to feel that this is a reliable, more safe option than other choices they have. But I do think in the end that these kids at access centers are facing difficulties that maybe the kids that Miles encountered aren't facing. So it does widen some of these inequalities.
One other thing I'd like to add is that, you know, when I started reporting this story, it was September. And one of the, you know, the part of the context was that soon, within a couple of weeks or maybe a month, a lot of the kids I talked to were scheduled to return to the classroom in some way, whether that was hybrid or full time. But you know, that was part of the context of the story, was that maybe this wasn't going to last, or at least it was going to have to change. And now, you know, Philadelphia has delayed its plan to return some young kids to the classroom for a few days a week. Montgomery County, where Nikki and Marissa live, just announced it was going all virtual starting November 23rd for at least 2 weeks. So, you know, these temporary makeshift thrown together solutions that we've all been thinking about in just a week or two or three and out, you know, seem like they're settling in. Like, this is what kids and families are going to be working with for the indefinite future. So the inequities, the, you know, the differences in the gaps in resources, the gaps in sort of time and attention, those seem like they're increasingly here to stay.
Well, Miles and Emily, thank you for your reporting, and thanks for breaking this down for us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Miles Bryan and Emily Rizzo are reporters for WHYY's Keystone Crossroads. The Y is produced by me, Malcolm Burnley, along with Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, Kelsey Hansen, Sabrina Boyd-Circa, and Buffy Gorilla. We get editorial direction from Ariella Cohen. We had editing help on this episode from Kevin McCory. You can find me on Twitter @MalcolmBurnley. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. We'll talk to you Monday.